The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1012. It's the 8th of March 2018. On the podcast today, I have Sarah Edmondson, Chief Executive Officer of Saffron Energy. That's SRON, soon to be Coro Energy, CROR. And Sarah talks about the new pan-Euro-Asian gas strategy. I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Phoenix Global Mining, that's PGM ticker, Bluebird Merchant Ventures, BMV, and Bushveld Minerals, BMN. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Countrywide, that's CWD, down big follow today, Randgold Resources, RRIS, and GKN. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sarah Edmondson, Chief Executive Officer of Saffron Energy. That's SRON ticker. Sarah, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you, Justin. I'm delighted to be here.
And I'd like to say we plan these kind of things, but we don't. It's entirely coincidental. It's International Women's Day, and you're on the podcast because there are not many CEOs are female, and that's quite surprising.
Absolutely.
You know?
That's very true. That's very true. So a shout out to all the ladies today.
Exactly. Okay. But first and foremost, I mean, I know you're going through a change there, and to the company, of course, but sum up, what is Saffron Energy all about, please, Sarah?
Absolutely. Well, and it's actually been a very interesting and very busy year. So Saffron Energy came to the market in February of 2017, so almost exactly 1 year ago today. When it came to the market, it was a pure Italian play with production assets in northern Italy. And what's happened is over the last 5 months, since we've signed a heads of agreement with Sound Energy, the company has gone through a sort of metamorphosis. So we've got a new board, we've got a new management, we've got a new strategy, which is effectively a pan-Euro-Asia strategy, and what we will also have is a new name, which is Coro Energy. So we are in the process of that metamorphosis, and the butterfly is about to emerge from the cocoon. We're very close to the finish line.
Excellent. So you said, like, in 30 days, you change your name and your strategy, and that's assuming that shareholders pass the relevant resolutions at the general meeting. And so, expand if you could on that strategy. What's it all about? Exploration, production, what's it all about, please, Sarah?
So we are an exploration-led company in the making, and our focus, it's going to be something very similar, very akin to what you would have seen with Echo Energy and with Sound Energies, which, you know, you obviously have got the, you know, three of our directors are also on the board of both Echo and Sound Energy. So what we are is we are an exploration-led company in the making. We are focused on transformational exploration, so multi-TCF, and with a preference for gas. Very, very similar to both Echo Energy and Sound Energy.
Well, do you know what? I mean, many people will be aware of James Parsons, what he's done at Sound Energy. I remember nearly, a while back, when Sound Energy was at 10 pence, I was seconds from hitting the buy button, and I didn't for some reason. And then literally a couple of months later, I looked at the share price, someone pointed it out, and they're at £1 pretty much, or close to £1.
Isn't that incredible?
What have I done there? So
it's been a remarkable success story, hasn't it? It's just been remarkable. And I think it's a very ambitious strategy, but at the same time, we've got, you know, that we've got the right people to make sure that we can replicate this and make it just as successful. So, clearly there is a geographical distinction between the companies. So right now you've got Sound Energy that's focused on Northern Africa. You've got Echo that's in South America. And our initial focus is going to be in Southeast Asia. You might have seen that we have recently appointed Ilham Habibi to the board of directors. He's a very prominent businessman and political figure in Indonesia. But one thing I would like to stress to investors is that we're not just going to be focusing, we're not just a one country company, we will be focusing on the entire region. So that's just going to be a first step towards a larger growth portfolio in that area.
Yeah, interesting. So we've got a bit of background on the board there now, but what about yourself, Sarah? If people are not aware of your background, explain what you've done and what has brought you here today.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, moved to Europe about 20 years ago, and have been here since. I started my career with Ernst & Young, working in M&A and the corporate advisory. Doing that all over Europe, actually, for some of the largest corporate clients out of Italy. Roughly 8 years ago, I started working for Po Valley Energy, which was, the original parent of Safran Energy. And I was the CEO for the last 5 years. About 4 or 5 years ago, I had met James Parsons. He was obviously doing some work in Italy at that time. We kind of had a chance to get together, compare notes, and become friends. And so when this opportunity kind of came along, we decided that this was our chance to do something together. I've also had a chance to get to know Fiona, because similarly with her experience with Rockhopper, she had also been in the Italian landscape for a while. And so it had, a chance to get to know her over the last 3 years. So this is something where, the board of directors, we actually have a little bit of history there, which just makes it all so much easier to start executing. There's very much an affinity amongst us.
Yeah, and your personal ambition here, where would you like, Coral Energy to be in, say, 5-10 years' time?
Oh, well, maybe 10 years is a little too far. I would say 3 to 5. 3 to 5 is the horizon that I would be focusing on. We are very much a buy and sell model. So this is exactly what we want to be doing with, for example, kind of the sound energy strategy. Our intention is to build an exceptional portfolio and ultimately within, 3 to 5 years to sell that on. We are not interested in being, a proper oil and gas company that's going to see our multi-TC CF, reserves as they're firmed up to actually see those into production. It's not a buy and sell, it's a build and sell model. So our focus is going to be on building that portfolio, and again, within that initial focus on the Southeast Asia region.
And therefore realizing, hopefully, a massive upside for your shareholders.
Absolutely. 10 times returns. And, there's only 1 in 10 companies that actually deliver 10 times returns. So it's an ambitious goal, but at the same time, you've got an ambitious board and an ambitious management team that's very hungry to see that strategy executed with success.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Sarah, if someone's listening to this and likes what you're about here, likes your experience and also the other board members and your strategy going forward, but are not following the story yet, please give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add it to the watch list, please.
Absolutely. The secrets to success, I would say, the 3 key selling points, in my opinion, is that we are well-funded, we've got an advantage access to deal flow, we also have a new board, new executive team that's got a record for driving shareholder value. And we've got a very highly motivated executive team that's already, screening and negotiating a number of potential opportunities that are all in line with our stated strategy. So we look forward to updating the investors in due course, and I would expect that's not going to be too far in the distant future.
Excellent stuff. Well, hopefully we'll chat in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely.
Sarah, thanks for that, and hopefully speak soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good form. Thank you.
Excellent stuff. And I know you're the man to talk to in the metal space, resource space. But what companies are you looking at recently? I saw your note come out on a couple of companies, but what companies have you been looking at, John?
We've just published on Phoenix Global Mining. We have a base case valuation of 11.5p. They're currently just over 4.5 in the market. And they have they're looking to restart an old copper cobalt mine in the United States, the old Empire mine. So that is of interest to us. And they're a very well seasoned team. So good people continuing to develop good value there.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've had Dennis on the podcast and lots of the guys from Phoenix Global Mining. Very nice guy, Dennis, there. And they're in the right space, it looks like, doesn't it? And like I said, a very good jurisdiction. And they've also just bought the option to buy a gold asset as well, haven't they, in Canada Lakes. So adding to their sort of portfolio there. But very interesting. Copper cobalt. It's going to be strong for years, that market, isn't it?
Yes, I think there's a lot of support, particularly for copper. But we know that auto manufacturers are running around trying to secure cobalt as well, and that they want that cobalt to come from proper sources. They don't want to see that coming from mines produced with child labor in the Congo. They want to see cobalt coming out of secure locations like the United States and the Western world, and that should attract premium price levels.
Yeah, exactly. And so, the Empire, you know, mine there. It's so what? Tell us a bit more about that, John, if you can, and what they're aiming to do there.
Well, they're looking to reopen the mine. It's in Idaho. They want to produce copper cathode using a heat leach and solvent extraction process, and that's near surface ore. So, relatively easy underground mining, and quite a simple project to get into. Just a question of proving up the resource and working out the numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Good stuff. All right. Anything else you're looking at, John?
You asked about interesting metals earlier, and vanadium is certainly
Yeah, before
of
we came on, I said that, because I saw, obviously, read your notes there, and it's always worth looking at, you know, what are the hot sort of, because I know we all know about the copper, you know, a good long-term story there, and of course you've got nickel and cobalt and lithium, but I'm saying any other sort of metals I've missed here, and so you're saying vanadium you like, yeah? Well, why?
95% of the world's vanadium goes into steel, and there's interesting stuff happening in steel at the moment, but we don't think any trade war is going to hurt production rates. In fact, if anything, it'll lift steel production in the United States, and they use a lot more vanadium over there in the strengthening of their steel according to their regulations. So that's positive for vanadium. The other big positive is there is a huge vanadium redox battery being constructed in China at the moment. It's taking several percent of the world market of vanadium over the course of the year, and that's quite positive. And that's only one of the big batteries that's being built at the moment. Others are being planned, although not constructed right now. So it's just a matter of time before this technology for battery storage for grid power, I think, starts to create yet more demand. Now, the problem is, there is not enough vanadium supply in the world to do more than one of these large-scale batteries at a time. So the manufacturers are going to have to, or producers are going to have to ramp up. And Bushveld Minerals, which we are no madam broker to, is one of those producers. It produces about 5% of world supply. And if vanadium prices stay up at these levels, then we should see their operating profit increase by something over $100 million this year, which is a dramatic increase if prices stay where we are.
Yeah, okay. And Bushveld have had a good move, though, haven't they? And you still think there's plenty of... you talked about Bushveld before, of course, but you think there's still plenty there, plenty of gas in the tank?
Well, we've all been very careful in the analyst community about not wanting to forecast these high price levels for vanadium for the whole year. But the price levels have stayed up where they are for a couple of months now. And it's quite possible that it may just carry on at this level going forward. So it has the potential to make fools of all of us and for prices to be extraordinarily higher than anyone has forecast.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned before we came on, so Bluebird Merchant Ventures. Just take us through that again, John, if you could.
Bluebird are looking to reopen a couple of old gold mines in South Korea. Nobody's looked at any mining in South Korea for a few years. Robert Friedland at Ivanhoe was one of the last guys to operate mining in South Korea. So there is history of it. It is possible. These mines were abandoned when gold prices were very much lower. I think one of them was closed when gold was at $140 an ounce, and now the gold price is nearly 10 times higher than that. There is very good potential for the reopening of these mines going forwards.
And over what time scale are you thinking, John?
Well, they could start extracting ore really very quickly, but knowing the way things work, it's almost likely to take a bit more time than just going straight into production. So we might see some the start of some production next year. Maybe it takes longer. I just don't know at this stage.
Yeah, okay, marvellous stuff. John, always good to have you on, and have a nice week, and we'll chat next week, fella.
Thank you. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, very well. Thanks. Very well. Thankfully, the snow has dissipated. Conditions are mildly spring-like. And the UK reporting season's in full thrust. I mean, what could be more exciting?
Yes, exactly. And hopefully, we are coming towards spring now, hopefully. We get this last bit of... I know some parts of the country are thawing out still, but it changed from winter to spring quite quickly the last couple of days here. And all we had was remnants of a snowman. But like I said, you wouldn't have recognised it as a snowman. It was a bit of snow on the ground. That's all that was left, on a bit of green grass. But my son seemed sad at that, though. He said, oh, he's gone. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Classic sort of Raymond Briggs manner, I'm afraid, that the snowman seems to melt a bit.
Companies-wise, is it bright on the company's outlook?
Well, I think to be honest, I think it's opportunistic. It's always opportunistic, but I think that's the true adjective in today's markets, driven around by the tweets of Donald Trump and Brexit excitements and whatever else. We cope from the sort of the continually ludicrous stocks like Countrywide, kind of estate agent stroke lettings company. We talked about this one a few weeks back, and there was a big desperate avoid over this name, and you can see the reasons why in today's numbers. Shares are down another 15%. It was clearly a terrible year for them in 2017. Lots of terrible mistakes, bogged up a big integration internally, didn't really get to grips with the changing property market in terms of how some of these digital only companies are working. They're talking about a year of recovery in 2018, but I'm afraid the market wants to sort of see that first. And given they haven't given any numbers on what exactly they're going to do or what they're targeting, I'm not surprised the shares are down again. This is a massive avoid, I'm afraid, when you've got the combination of debt and management that aren't clearly doing a good job. That's one where, you leave it well alone and you focus on other parts of the market. More generally, when you look at like house builders, and clearly there's been a little bit of political support over the last few days for more house building. That all sounds great news for the house builders. Please remember, we've had some shabby property numbers this morning. The RICS survey was flat on its back, worse for a number of years. Property is one of those confidence game sort of investments. It's big and illiquid. And my feeling still is that the property sector, the house building sector and related, at best is rolling over. I'm personally avoiding it and not investing in any of those names, despite in the house builders, some attractive yields at face value.
Yeah. I just think at the moment you are right. It's a confidence thing, houses, and those figures bear that out. About the sale, let people not selling the houses. There's uncertainty, and I thought whatever it's brought about by, but I'm sure Brexit doesn't help. But Countrywide, and are they trying to shut the door? And I think they are trying to almost shut the door in 2017 and hoping 2018 be good, because even at the top of their release there, they've got 2017, a disappointing year in capitals, and 2018 management change and recovery plan underway. So as well as they listen, that's done. We're on now to a positive start. But that remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Well, they need to give more details. And they've admitted in the statement today that they'll be giving more details later in the year. So you're in a desperate sort of uncertain no man's land at the moment. And guess what? The shares continue to drift. They've got debt. If you're an equity holder here, cash out, move on. But I think most people have given up a long time ago. My goodness, the shares were 100p higher even 10 months ago, let alone where they were back in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, well, they're £7 in £7, and now they're 73p.
Now they're just under 80p. Absolutely, yeah. It's been a massive value destruction. Avoid it like the plague. One for the experts, I wouldn't touch it. But I think that, as I say, I think for the house builders generally, that you look at something like a Taylor Wimpey, right? Mainstream, reasonable yields, reasonably sensibly run. The way they've rolled over the last few months, the shares, is very, I think, indicative of a property market that's becoming tougher. And we all know the reasons why. Property is expensive to buy. It's on elevated multiples versus incomes. And renting often is actually more expensive than getting a mortgage. So you put it all together, it's not a great environment, even though ultimately we all need to live somewhere.
Yeah, and do you know what? If you look at the share price, and maybe on a really simplified technical level, you know that 200-day moving average everyone talks about as the bull or bear line. And like I said, you know, it lasts. I mean, the share price went below that on the 31st of July, 2015. That was at £5. So if you got out then, and so that's a major indication, you'd have been fine. You've ridden this down. It's not gone above that. Even all the rallies it's had, it's not finished above that at all. So you could safely say that at the moment is sitting at a 128. That's a long way off. But, of course, when that flattens out and it goes up and finishes a day above that, then maybe it's time to have a look at it because that may be a turn. But it hasn't done that for like a couple of years now. So it's still in a bearish downtrend, you know. What else are you looking at, Chris?
Yeah, otherwise, in the FTSE 100, I see GKN. Obviously, there's been a big old debate in the House of Commons as well about whether GKN are going to be taken over or not, whether Melrose are going to be successful. I see GKN themselves are doing their own internal PR campaign today with another presentation about their Project Boost and how they can manage the business so much better than the corporate tigers Melrose, who have the audacity to make a bid. Again, it shows that it's amazing how company management teams, once they're in a corner, suddenly find all these initiatives and cost savings and different strategies to save their skin. I mean, I reckon give Melrose a go. I mean, if they've made a bid, they've seen an opportunity, and I'd give them a go because, frankly, GKN's management over the last few years have, in my opinion, undermanaged the business. Yeah. And it's all a bit too late, to be honest, at the moment. So if you're a GKN shareholder, I would stay long despite the bump in the shares year to date on this takeover chat, mainly because something's going to happen. Either GKN are going to sell themselves or they're going to be taken over by Melrose, and that's going to happen at a premium to today's share price. So that one's still in play.
Is that what they said, GKN? They found all these initiatives now? It's amazing. Shareholders probably shouting, you know, why didn't you find this, you know, years ago, a year ago, or 6 months ago? And now it's coming into the play, the fore, you know? It's ridiculous.
And we saw the same in Unilever last year. Unilever got a sort of a bid approach from Kraft, the big US consumer staples company, and suddenly they found all these initiatives that they previously kept under a bushel somewhere. And admittedly, in Unilever's case, the shares went up about 10 quid, which, you know, if you're a shareholder, that's you know, nice darts. Yeah. But with GKN, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, they are a stalwart of British industry, and there's been lots of provocative comments around that front. But Melrose are also a London-listed business. They've done a good job in turning around global businesses. I say give them a go. I don't think the UK market's going to lose out. It may actually get a better, more dynamic GKN business out as a consequence. So, you know, lots of stuff going on. There's all chat about GKN selling bits to certain American industrial concerns. Something's going to happen with GKN beyond what we've seen already, and the shares are, after a good bumper, are kicking around the 420s. I think ultimately you're going to see something in the mid fours, if not something closer towards 5 quid by the end of the year. That would be my guess. I would still be long on an event driven sort of strategic perspective.
Marvelous stuff. All right, Chris, anything else?
Yeah, a couple of quick ones. Randgold, talked about them a few times. They've come out to say that the government in the DRC in Africa, in Central Africa, have pushing through a new mining law. This has overhung the share recently. But I note two things. Number one is the company is still talking to the government. And this is the way it works. The way it works in negotiation with African governments, or maybe any government, is that the government says something provocative, generally associated with them making more money for themselves, taking, in this case, a bigger royalty cut or enhanced royalties, that the companies who are big employers, big taxpayers, negotiate. And then ultimately, there's an end game where it's sort of everyone can kind of exit the negotiations with their heads held high. And I think this is what's happening. What's interesting is that the Randgold shares are down slightly today. They've slipped below 60 quid. I would say that is a buying level, a support level, a level that I like. And my feeling is now that even more news is out on this, people should stop worrying about it and focus on the fact that the company is still increasing production. Great gold reserves, doubled the dividend last time out. And for me, actually, gold is an asset to be holding at this moment in time, given the uncertainties in the broader world.
So where are the primary their operations then? That's where they are, is it?
Yeah. Okay. They've got two main centres. The DRC in Central Africa is about 25% of what they do. The majority is in West Africa, in countries such as Mali, Côte d'Ivoire, Senegal, etc., where there have been over the years some excitements there too, including a little coup in Mali, which was, obviously you can imagine, a little bit exciting, although well away from the mining areas. Mm. This is just the nature of business in many countries, but certainly true of gold mining or any mining activities in Africa. Yeah. And the negotiations with governments is clearly an important part. And what Randgold have been very good at doing is actually saying, look, guys, we employ a lot of people, a lot of local people, we pay a lot of taxes, we've given you either a silent stake in the business or the mine or the royalty stream. You know, don't bust the golden egg, and, you know, no pun intended there. But and I think this is just part of one of those negotiations, to be honest. I'm surprised after stellar full year 2017 numbers a few weeks ago, the shares have gone from above £70 to as I say, just below £60 today. For me, they are one of the more compelling opportunities within the FTSE 100 zone at this moment in time.
Marvellous stuff. Excellent, Chris. And that's it. Yep.
Absolutely. Speak soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At four, five. It's top five. What am I starting at four? At five, Feedback, FDBK. Surprise turnaround by ex-non-executive director Trevor Brown. Started rebuying shares after he's been selling them since last year. Apparently he's had a chat with the new CEO, and he said he's very impressed with him. That was his words. That's FDBK. EQT, that's Ectech, second most followed. At three, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, Upland Resources Limited, that's UPL. Number one most followed company was Harvest Minerals, that's HMI. I had, of course, one of the guys on Harvest yesterday, and Mark Hayhoe, chatting about their first major sales contract. Okay, time for the top five most popular RNSs in the last 24. I don't know what's happening today. I'm really, you know, I've got a bit of a cold. I'm very stuttery and stammery. Almost going to sneeze every time I go to speak. So sorry, I do apologise. All right, number five most popular RNSs: Upland Resources, UPL, convertible loan note facility. It's a CLN with a difference. The difference being, the guys issuing the notes are major shareholders of the company, and I mean major, I'm out of the share register. At four, 88 Energy, option proceeds and expiry update. At three, Imperial Energy, Dempsey production testing to resume. At two, N4 Pharma, Nuvec update. At one, Zenanga, iron ore, project update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.